Yeah, started. I go through the policy, Linux Foundation antitrust policy. Linux Foundation meetings involve participation by industry competitors, and it is the intention of the Linux Foundation to conduct all of its activities in accordance with applicable antitrust and competition laws. It is therefore extremely important that attendees adhere to meeting agendas and be aware of and not participate in any activities that are prohibited under applicable US, state, federal, or foreign antitrust and competition laws. Examples of types of actions that are prohibited at Linux Foundation meetings and in connection with Linux Foundation activities are described in the Linux Foundation antitrust policy. If you have questions about these matters, please contact your company counsel. If you are a member of the Linux Foundation, feel free to contact Andrew Updegrove of the firm of Gesmer Updegrove LLP, which provides legal counsel to the Linux Foundation. Hyperledger is committed to creating a safe and welcoming community for all. For more information, please visit our Hyperledger Code of Conduct. So, welcome everybody. This morning, actually afternoon in the APEC region, we have Mr. Yair Zehavi from Israel. I will deploy. He will tell us about more about his solutions for filling in the trade finance gap, which is actually a big problem in the industry. So if you agree, I will leave the floor to Yair for him to have a speech and to detail, give us more details about InVU. Yair.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me here. Thank you so much, Andre, for the warm welcome. Thank Julian for also for previous assistance. And thank you all for taking the time to listen to us. Andre, do you want me to share the presentation or do you want you to
share? Well, like you want. No, not a problem. I will share it. Hold on.
I can do that. I can definitely.
Can you? But if you... Perfect.
Okay, so let me just share the screen in a minute.
Yeah, no worries. Take your time.
Okay, here we go. Everyone see? Okay.
Great.
Okay. So we are InVU. We're actually all about bringing financial inclusion across the value chain and supply chain, and we'll talk, of course, more about it as we start. A few words about InVU, which I assume most of you haven't heard of. We were founded in 2018. We're an early stage Israeli startup, which developed a DLT platform, obviously based on Hyperledger Fabric. We're committed to connecting market people and opportunities and use the blockchain and other disruptive technologies to meet the market needs. And as you all can imagine, we're specifically focused on value chain and supply chain. Thus far, we were listed at KPMG's top 100 leading global fintech innovators in 2018. And at the beginning of 2020, we won the Better Tomorrow Challenge from Unicre and Google. This is kind of what we are up to date. And so this slide is actually talking about what we're actually trying to do. I assume most of you are very familiar with the challenges across the supply chain. There's various hurdles across the path, and in Gusel, what we've done is we've developed several solutions on our technology platform, which are aiming to provide the different supply chain players with secured and trusted ecosystems. Now, the players include, of course, MSMEs, insurers, bankers, traders, and so on. And I'll explain later on when we'll deep dive into the various use cases. Specifically, what you see here is an agri-finance or agriculture kind of a process from the input supplier to the consumer, but we're actually, the system we developed support not just agribusiness, but all types of businesses. We're currently looking specifically into, due to COVID-19, we're specifically looking into agri-financing and agribusiness. I'll explain later on. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the numbers and what actually got Dror, the co-founder of Nivea, and myself to go out there and understand that there is a huge problem here. We're talking about the financing gap. The financing gap of micro, small, and medium SMEs businesses across the world. We're talking about a huge number, almost 315 million businesses across the world, and which generate a huge number of over $26 trillion. That's trillion with a T. The financing gap is amazing, because what you would expect that this that such a large group generating so much of the world GDP would not get into such a lack of financing. We're talking about 41% of MSMEs in developing countries that have financing needs that aren't met, and across the globe, a gap of 4.8 trillion. You see that it's spread all over the globe. There's no one place in the world that is not suffering from an MSME financing gap. But that's a big problem. When you go to the banks and you go to various credit banks and non-banks credit provider, and you try to figure out why there is such a gap, why aren't MSMEs getting it? You understand that most banks simply are fearing the risk of default, meaning that a credit they provide, whether through a loan or any other financial tool, are not going to be paid, and they want to mitigate this. How they usually mitigate it is two distinct ways. Either they have a lot of data on the person, market, segment, industry that they are going to provide credit to, or that they have a very reliable collateral that they can seize in case of a default and prevent loss. Now, when you look what happened with MSMEs, most cases, and specifically in developing countries, think about the farmer in Africa or in the South America. He doesn't have a lot of data to provide, definitely not digital data that they can provide the bank to show their track record, their history, that the fact that they're credit worthy. And of course, collateral is always an issue, and there's a lot of fraud with those issues. So once we understood the problem and we understood why they're not getting credit, we were set out and went to build Nivea. Now, in a very high level, how does Nivea work? There are various actors that we have discussed or mentioned already. There are the MSMEs, there are the banks or non-banks that provide credits. There are other players along the supply chain, traders, and so on. We allow each and everyone to very easily tap into Nivea, either through a web and mobile API or a mobile app or a file of some sort that is downloaded either from the mobile or imported to the web app or through a direct link to their enterprise system, whether that's an ERP or a salary or whatever it is. They tap easily into Nivea through an open API. We format the data in a manner that is setting the data in a confidential manner, and I'll explain more about it later on when we'll talk about the various ways we ensure the privacy and confidentiality of the data. And what we're doing when we're talking specifically about the assets, we're creating on a unique non-fungible asset on the blockchain. And I'll explain a little bit more about it down the road. But the fact is that we're manifesting a collateral on Nivea's platform, which is based, of course, on Fabric, Proletar Fabric. So there are various use cases that we're supporting. From inventory financing, warehouse receipt, crop receipts, insurance policy or insurance claim, specifically on credit insurance and so on, surety bonds, invoice financing or factoring or invoice discounts, all the types of financial tools for account receivables and account payables. Today we'll drill in with you guys into two specific use cases that we're currently focused on. One is invoice financing, and the other is a warehouse receipt system. I'll explain a little bit about those systems, and we can take it. And I'll be happy if anyone has questions, I'll be happy to answer. But I guess, and Andre, correct me if I'm mistaken, but we'll have a Q&A session afterwards.
Of course, as usual, we close the session with a Q&A. Yes, usually we do so.
Okay, thank you. So, I'm going to explain a little bit what is factoring or definitely receivable financing or invoice financing. It's actually what happens is that a lot of time businesses sell their products and getting issuing an invoice and getting paid 30, 60, 90 days later on. They need an interim or bridge financing for the in order to operate their businesses, either for salaries, reinvestments in their operations, paying suppliers, and on. And this is where a lot of time where financing is missing. They need the working capital. When you're looking at the worldwide, how big is that? The factoring and invoice financing volume, it's going upward trend and has a huge market. We're talking the number here is the figure is over $2.7 trillion market, and it's constantly going about 10% per year according to SCI data. Now, when you look at what's wrong with that market is you see that more than 80% of the SMEs financing applications are getting rejected. When you drill down again, you always see the problem is lack of data, poor credit history, a lot of fraud, and so banks are fearing bad debt. Those processes right now are, in most cases, pretty cumbersome. So a bank wouldn't want to bother with a small loan. So putting all that together, just for invoice financing and factoring, you see that there's a $1.5 trillion gap. And this is like something that SMEs need for survival. And again, post-COVID, we're not post-COVID-19 yet, unfortunately, but when you look at the result of what COVID-19 has done to SMEs, this types of financing becomes even more critical. Now, moving to what Invue is actually built and have a better product in place is an invoice registry, which I'll explain in a minute how we do it. It allows an immediate screening of an invoice to make sure that invoice was not previously used for a different for duplicate financing, shadow financing, eliminating a significant risk of default from fraudulent actors, and which is estimated to be about 1 or 2% of all over of SME invoice financing applications. And how do we do it? It's what happens is when a bank is when an SME applier goes to the bank and apply for an invoice financing, the bank checks with Invue to register whether this specific invoice exists, has been financed, or has a lien on it, or anything. Invue system would let that bank know that nothing has happened yet, and that specific bank is then able to register and put a charge on that specific invoice. Now, if that specific invoice would be presented to bank number two or to credit insurers to duplicate credit insurance, what will happen is they'll check the Invue system, the Invue platform for invoices. They'll get a notification that invoice is not clear for financing. And I'm obviously oversimplifying the process in order to make it more understandable. and that fraudulent activity would be prevented. The original financer will be alerted that, that such an attempt has taken place, and that they'll be aware that they need to act on gathering their collateral, because somebody, there is an attempt to double finance an invoice, and that would indicate also that the SME is trying to defraud the bank. I think I don't need to explain that removing fraudulent activity from the market would ease the willingness of credit providers to provide with SMEs with financing. So another thing that we have recently started working on is a warehouse receipt system for agribusiness financing and for commodity financing. What happens is that, let me just explain how warehouse receipt financing actually works. A farmer is taking the crop that they provided, putting it in a warehouse, taking receiving a paper, these days it's a paper receipt, they're taking a paper receipt from that warehouse, going to a bank, depositing the warehouse receipt with the bank, then selling the commodity to a buyer, could be a processor, could be many things. That processor pays the bank, gets the paper receipt from the bank, either continues to sell it forward or goes to the warehouse and collects the produce that it was deposited. We're in many developing countries where warehouse receipt system was installed, we saw it was a proven instrument to allow farmers on the rest of the value chain to obtain financing, and it's considered one of the ways to fight poverty, one of the ways to make poor smallholder farmers get out of the poverty cycles. There are many benefits. If you just Google warehouse receipt systems, you'll get tons of benefits, tons of research on how important such a system is. However, and this is why we are looking deeply into it, because agriculture financing is mandatory. If we're looking at data from the World Bank, we're seeing that demand for food is obviously going to keep on growing. We need farmers in developing countries to provide food to the entire world. The demand for food is constantly increasing. We're talking about 70% increase by 2050. Now, what's the problem with such things? And we're seeing a lot of places where warehouse receipt system were put in place but failed. It's the fact that there's a lack of trust between the parties. The warehouse, the bank, the farmer, trusting each other. There's a lot of problems there, and we see that there have been many cases of fraud. If you Google warehouse receipt fraud, you'll get tons of cases. And some of them stem from lack of regulatory framework, but and lack of trust between the parties. But if you put in a system, a blockchain-based system that would allow the immutable issuance of the warehouse receipt, there won't be a scenario where the warehouse receipt could be multiple times financed. There won't be a situation where the warehouse receipt was issued for a non-existing produce. And a lot of other types of fraud, and I'm not going to drill into them right now, but just explain on a high level. I understand that this would solve many of the issues and help closing the gap. So just to name a few of the advantages is we're creating a secure collateral data source. There's this would ease the risk of in the commodities market. It will increase the market power of the small farmers and dealers. They won't have to sell their crops at the time of harvest. They can wait for better pricing, for better time to sell. They won't have to sell it like today to the first buyer that is willing to pay them too low of a price. And every place you see that the warehouse system was built, there's the cost and the transaction of and quality awareness is growing, because there's a automatically when you apply such a system, there is some sort of a supervision on the warehouse, the way the warehouse handles the commodities, in ensuring that the commodities are at higher quality and are stored in good conditions. And this is, again, benefiting the entire the ecosystem in providing better financing to the smallholder farmers, but also to the buyers and processors. I'm not gonna, unless later on someone wants, we can talk about other use cases that can be built on InView's platform. All the use cases are actually offered in three ways, and which are very different from one each other, but all are aimed to accommodate business needs of an ecosystem. If we're talking about, for example, with invoice financing, no bank is willing that any other bank would have any type of visibility into which invoice they have financed or not. So what we're actually providing with the banks is with the in that specific use case, is that every data going into the system is being irreversibly encoded or encrypted, if you will. There's no chance that any bank or InView or anyone else actually understanding the data. Part of the advanced algorithm that we've developed include data formation and encoding in a way that we can identify exact matches, but our secret sauce is the fact that we also know to identify similar records, meaning if you have issued, if you are taking one invoice and issuing another fictitious invoice and which is actually talking about the same deal in order to try and defraud a bank, we'll know to identify the similarities between those two invoices and alert, although we have no idea what's the data in the invoice itself. That's the first type of solution. Another way that you can use, and we're using it in different use cases, is that we're talking about only specifically permissioned invoices, or not invoices, excuse me, only specifically permissioned data elements can be exposed between the specific parties, meaning if a farmer wants to sell to a producer, they can decide which producer can see the data, which data elements they can see. We do it through, again, specific encryption algorithms that allow exposure of only portion of the data to selected members. And again, this is relevant for, definitely for warehouse receipt system, where only when some of the data is fully encrypted, some of the data is encrypted but can be visible to permission players according to the data owner discretion. And there's a third solution, which is available for other use cases that I didn't detail earlier, which actually says, which actually allows a closed network only for permissioned members to see the data on the network. But again, it's a closed circle. This is would be relevant, for example, for surety bonds, where everyone that is allowed to view them can view them in a closed network. So again, we're offering our various use cases and three types of technical solution in terms of data confidentiality. Either complete confidentiality, nobody can see the data or decipher the data. The second solution is only that specific permissioned entities can see the data at the discretion of the data owner. And the third is that the data is available for permissioned members only. I mean, everyone that is familiar with the Hyperledger Fabric knows, can understand how we do the third one. That's the simplest one. So the key benefits that the InView platform has is, to top everything is, of course, we allow full transparency and immutability, anti-fraud and risk elimination. We're tokenizing the assets in a way that is non-fungible. Nobody can, there's no risk of two actors owning the same asset or have or asset being double finance or double charged. There's no risk of it. Everything is on blockchain, so the ownership and pledges, charges, and status is indisputable. Everyone of the actors is fully identified. There's no risk of a unknown entity playing in the system or tampering with the system. The data is confirmed. The tracking of the asset through the supply chain or the value chain is transparent, and there is a very good tracking, which is easily verifiable. The history is visible. Everything is, of course, done, again, depending on the use case. We develop smart contracts for each use case to specifically adhere to the actors. Of course, in every type of tool or use case we develop, there are very different types of actors. Everything is very highly secured, and we're using an advanced encryption mechanism. And the access and the built-in Hyperledger feature is, of course, that the access is only on permission basis. If you were any party that would like to use InView, actually always has the concern about compliance, IT, their business effectiveness, or risk management, and of course security. We believe that we are meeting a very high standard in each and every one of those elements. And it's the way we build the system is to allow a very quick onboarding of all actors. This is one of our key features, one of our key goals, to not have a cumbersome, slow 6 months integration process. We're trying to make it as easy as possible to onboard the system. And so again, to allow minimal IT footprint and minimal entry barrier to any organization wishing to use InView. And this is it. This is what we're talking about. We're backed by Barclays. We're part of the Barclays Accelerators, Emma Capital, Nielsen, and we were part of IBM AlphaZone Accelerator. Thank you all for taking the time and listening to me.
Thank you, Yair. It was really an interesting presentation. Is there any question from the attendance?
Hi, Andrea. Yeah, I got one question. It's Ross from Valera. The question I have is, what stage is the system at? Do you have production usage, or are you piloting, or what's your milestone?
As I said earlier, we're in early stage. We have private beta launch in the UK for invoice financing, which was right now the process was put on hold due to we were supposed to go live in Q2, but we all know what happened in Q2. We are in initial talks to the regarding the warehouse receipt system, and there are several, and for surety bonds, or again, we're in initial talks to for initial customers. We are not live yet, but we hope to be by the beginning of 2021.
Okay, thanks.
And which markets are you aiming for? You're an Israeli-based company. Are you looking at Europe or the whole globe or the specific market?
Well, of course, our vision is eventually to offer InView solution across the globe. Right now, as I stated earlier, we started with the UK, aiming to go to the rest of the Europe. Right now, we also as part of COVID-19, we also shifted our focus a little bit to developing countries. So we're definitely looking with the warehouse receipt solution. We're targeting actually the three main markets. I'm going back with the slides. Okay, is definitely talking about Latin America, Africa, both and Asia.
Okay.
Anybody else would like to ask questions to Yair? No other questions. I see. It was very exhaustive, let's say, sir.
Okay.
Detailed presentation. It was very good.
Thank you. And I would like maybe, Julian, and maybe a question for you guys is, we definitely see Hyperledger and a lot of projects that are happening on Hyperledger in trade finance. What would you guys think, again, from being involved in so many projects, similar projects and sync projects like that, what would you think would be, is the right now the biggest challenge that the Hyperledger fabric, Hyperledger in general, is now looking at in order to get more and more projects into production?
That's a very good question, right? So I don't know if there's anyone. I mean, we're seeing actually because of COVID has, it's a two-edged sword, right? One, it's frozen like you many ways, but it's also created a case for why you need digitization. So we're seeing a lot of projects rushing forward, and we're seeing a lot kind of slowed down. I think in the end, blockchain is about trust. So the most challenging part is actually building the consortiums and pulling the governance together for all the different parties involved in any blockchain consortium. I would say that's probably the biggest challenge. And of course, this is what we're doing with trade finance, and trade finance is all about, you know, mitigating, you know, trust between different parties. I'd say that's the biggest. I think I would love you, as you're doing Hyperledger, you should become a Hyperledger member. And you've got Marta here. Marta, I think you should definitely reach out. Marta, do you want to introduce who you are? You cover Israel as well, I believe, right? She's my colleague in Europe. And she's
pleasure meeting you, Marta.
Have you met Marta? No, she's not there.
A few minutes ago, I saw her.
Yeah, she's there. But yeah, so I think that's a very quick question.
Sorry, did you ask about me, Julian? Because I had a bad connection.
No problem. We're just thinking about that the community in Europe, right? As you're a part of that community, and I'm saying they should reach out to the Hyperledger to talk to you, right? In VR. Yep.
No, I actually was just put on down a note to connect with Yair separately.
Yeah.
So looking, I think looking forward to it, Mark. No.
Great. I'll reach out an email.
Thank you.
Excellent. So I think there is we're seeing such growth, right? Around a region, around the globe. I cover Asia Pacific. China is a lot of things you're doing are being done in China, but not done elsewhere. Of course, it's different everywhere, right? It's different kind of feeling in every market. But I think what you're doing is the low-hanging fruit, which is, I think especially your trade finance.
John?
Finance.
John, can you come here quietly?
Hello, Marta, we can hear you.
Oh, sorry. Oh, my God, sorry.
Everyone's at home.
So, Julian, maybe I'll just add something.
So
I'm Bob. I've been involved in trade finance in different ways for a number of years now. I ran a small supply chain financing business in South Africa, which looked after green entrepreneurs, basically. Yeah, and essentially the issue is, you know, is one of working capital. So if you're in agriculture, as you say, you know, you buy the seed one season, you then get the crops sold another season, possibly if there's no climate or other, you know, things that interfere in that. And so, you know, the farmers live, you know, the traditional sort of feast famine sort of type approach to life. You know, same with entrepreneurs, you know, small entrepreneurs, as they call them, small traders, however you call them. Yeah, so a guy wants to buy the solar panels, to install on the local roof of the municipality, it's going to cost him 10 times what he earns on an average month, you know, to do that. So, you know, creating the working capital to allow him to buy the work, the solar panels in the first place was the challenge I set myself. So there are numerous examples of where, yeah, traders have to raise working capital. And there's a confusion, I think, in many people's minds between capital, which to my mind is about what you keep in case things go wrong, and working capital, which is what you use in your day-to-day business. And so trade finance, to my mind, has always been about how do we create working capital for the business in a way which matches the trading cycle of the business. So if you're a big company, you know, you're driven by DSO, day sales outstanding. So I used to finance, you know, for example, $1 billion worth of chicken from Brazil to the Middle East every year. 63 days at sea. They had a target for DSO of, you know, less than 40 days. Pretty easy to find solutions to that. When you're talking about small traders, it's more about they've got irregular orders, they've got irregular cash flow. And it's about how do you manage them or help them to manage that irregular cash flow and the way which allows them to spend more of their time out there prospecting for new business and less of their time trying to find ways of plugging the financing gap. And I think that's the trick here. Now, the problem is that what we see in the industry is a lot of very narrowly focused propositions which are being built. Because the banks tend to focus only on the big guys. They will only put the skills into the big guys. They won't put the skills that are needed for mitigation into the small guys. But that's actually the small guys is where you need the mitigation. And so an insurance isn't the only mitigation that you can sort of use. There are many other mitigants. So it's a question of how do we sort of bring together the skills, you know, which are clearly in, you know, groups like this, you know, people like Ross, for example, I've known for ages, you know, have definitely got the skills to make a meaningful impact on the small guys, so the people who are largely ignored by the banks, who banks would much rather just give overdrafts to. Yeah. And obviously overdrafts is the first step to hell for most small businesses. So I think that's, you know, but the problem is that there's nobody really in a coherent way. And I've not seen the World Bank do this. I've not seen the IFC do this. Create a platform which allows small businesses to operate. So you've got an invoice financing exchange in Thailand. You've got another one in Singapore. Yeah, there are others in the Middle East, etc. But all very disjointed, different standards, different approaches to integration to the ERP platforms, you know, to the likes of Xero and sort of Sage, those sort of things. And it's about how do we sort of help the small entrepreneur focus on what their real job is. Is where I think the automation comes into this and the risk mitigation comes into this. And I've not seen a platform so far which really sort of does a lot to do those two things.
Bob, that's really useful for me to understand from an experienced practitioner in the industry, because I'm not. So it's good to hear those views. From what you've heard of InView and the method by which they're trying to ensure the privacy and the integrity of the data, such that you can look towards a trade finance invoicing platform sort of registry. From a controls perspective, does the logic hold so far? Would it pass the control function test and then it's just then the application off?
Yeah, this is to be honest, this is the never-ending challenge in trade finance in the last 10 years, which is, yeah, so the biggest innovation I did in HSBC, which is the largest trade shop in the world, was to install 3 high-frequency scanners. Yeah, that was it. That was digitization. And the reason for that is because we had probably about sort of 5,000 people working in Mong Kok who grew up in trade. So they knew how to spot a fraud before a fraud became a fraud. They knew how to spot sort of, you know, a duplicate. They knew how to, you know, everything that sort of, you know, is going to lose you money, they were your primary risk mitigant for. And that was all locked up in their heads. But the problem we had in HSBC was that those people getting, you know, into their early 50s, they were getting towards retirement, you know, particularly the most skilled ones. and they were very expensive. Pricing in trade is not sort of, you know, broad. It's not a, you don't make a lot of margin. It's about volume. And how do we take that skill and experience that sits in those people's heads and then turn that into something which you can then put onto a platform, which then becomes your major risk mitigant? And yeah, we can see even very sophisticated banks still falling foul of frauds. You know, there's been one in Singapore in the last couple of weeks, massive frauds, which are warehouse frauds, double invoicing frauds, underlying goods, you know, sort of are not what are being described, all these different things. So that logic that sits in people's heads, where you sort of look at an invoice and you say, well, hold on a minute, this guy doesn't normally sort of do this business, so why are we seeing suddenly they're shipping coffee? Or why is it they doubled the volume of coffee this month? Or why is it they're sort of paying in this on these terms rather than those terms? All those sort of things which, you know, in normal trade terms will ring alarm bells in somebody's head when you see a change in behavior, particularly. And that's a logic that you need to build into these platforms, because otherwise you will find fraud is your the number one sort of major risk that you're running. And the second one when you're dealing with agriculture will be climate, and your third one will be sort of staff. And particularly in places like Africa, where you cannot sort of find staff who are properly trained, and if you do find them, there's always a tendency to sort of bribery or corruption.
Alrighty, that makes sense.
So basically what you're trying to do is you're trying to build as many mitigants in there as possible. I think AI, machine learning, sort of potentially, but the trouble is finding a data set which is big enough. You know, sort of, you know, in trade finance, in my shop in Standard Bank, for example, we did our BAL analysis. So we looked at, you know, how much loss we'd had over the preceding 3 years to justify our capital numbers. The problem I found was that we couldn't find any losses, because we didn't lose money, because all our people were too good. Where we lost money was on two basically operational frauds, which was one was a trader out of Mauritius who basically was shipping TVs to Africa from India. And it started at $5 million a month, then went to $10 million, then went to $30 million. And then, as always happens with these sort of type of frauds, you get to $70 million and the reimbursement doesn't turn up. And all of a sudden, the bank is running around trying to find out where the person who's meant to reimburse us has gone, you know, because they've obviously run off with the $70 million. So it's about sort of, you know, that sort of understanding of a very large business, you know, and then taking that and applying it to very small businesses. That's a big challenge. And yeah, and just an example in my own small business, we had one operational loss, which was very simple. So what we did was we took a reimbursement from the buyer, the ultimate buyer, and we basically paid for the equipment to the supplier. So we didn't give the small trader any money at all, right at the beginning. So we basically bridged the gap. That relies on the big buyer actually having good operational processes. In the example I'm thinking about, the big buyer forgot about our mandate, or forgot about the mandate to pay us, and instead paid the trader. And the trader, of course, thought whoopee, and then immediately took his girlfriend off for a nice holiday in Hong Kong. And we didn't get our reimbursement. So yeah, it's that understanding human nature as well sort of comes into it.
I think as well as that feedback, Bob, this sounds like there's a book in some of these stories.
I tell you, it's a fantastic business. I love the business. I absolutely love it, as you can probably tell. But it's because it is so intricate and so difficult. You know, that you either love it or you hate it. You either stay in it for a lifetime or you sort of run a mile when you get near it. But you know, sort of my business now, what we do is we fund dollars and sterling and other currencies for African traders on open account. But we only do that on a pre-funded basis. But we still require trade documents to flow to us. We still want to see an invoice to understand why the payment's being made. We apply very strong KYC and AML controls to all the payments which are being made. And that's increasingly being required by sort of the FATF and others, you know, as well, which just reinforces the need to know your customer, you know why your trust customers are doing things, know understand what they're doing. And if you can replicate that knowledge into some sort of database of some sort, that's brilliant. And of course, blockchain helps because at least you can then compare what you've seen, you know, from one person with what you can see from another person, and what you see from what they've done before, etc. And it's all self, you know, auditing, which is a massive sort of you know, thing about the blockchain.
I want maybe to jump in just to explain one of the things we try to do with DNVO is also allow interoperability between various blockchain networks. We do understand that there are many systems going out there. We know about WeTrade, Marco Polo, a lot of others in specific, when you're talking about specifically trade finance initiatives. All are great initiatives. I'm always for the ones that are using Hyperledger Fabric. And we understood that there are also issues of, and I think Bob, you mentioned it in a way that there are sometimes something happen. There are networks, and but across networks, there are always a risk of fraud between the various networks. And what we try to do with DNVO is also provide a solution that of a registry network actually that allows two separate ecosystems. Either they're blockchain-based or not blockchain-based, or even manually based, to allow registration of the assets to prevent all types of fraud, almost that I can think of. But I'm sure there are many frauds that I'm not aware of. And I see you smiling, Bob. I know that you can write a book about the types of fraud. But we're trying to address at least the shadow, the duplications, the fresh air, the revolving, the carousel ones, again, with the various assets that are along the chain. So, I would love to hear your take, whether you think this is something that can really help eventually what we said to go for the smallholder, the small business.
I think, you know, sort of, you know, from your part of the world, actually, you know, I used to work with a trader in the frozen orange juice marketplace who did financing invoices for the fruiteries and so on, for frozen, you know, and those sort of things. And he extended that actually to pharmaceuticals. So it's a very effective way of doing things. It's just that, you know, it's obviously, you know, you've got an understanding of the trade cycle. It's understanding that trade cycle and then using that to your advantage. And the question is, how far can you mechanize that, and how far does that rely on human intelligence? And obviously, I'm a great fan of sort of robotizing things and everything else. You know, I've spent the last 10 years trying to do that. But still, there's that sort of residuals of doubt, that because you've got this primary line of defense. Because it's not like payments. In payments, you pretty much, yeah, once you're funded, you're funded. In trade, you're waiting always for reimbursement. And if the reimbursement doesn't happen, then, you know, then you're out, and you're sitting on a loss, and that's the issue. And obviously, what's happened in China is you had all these peer-to-peer platforms which were trying to replace the trade finance cycle, but they were just a recipe for a fraud in most cases. So, and because the operator took no responsibility, you know, the operator just sort of took the fees and said whoopee. And didn't took no responsibility for who was on the platform. That created massive degrees of risk.
I totally agree. And this is one of the issues we're trying to address. We're saying, okay, there's no nothing preventing somebody. We're talking about, let's talk invoice financing or factoring, whatever. There's nothing preventing right now someone to take an invoice to one bank and then go to finance it there. Take the same invoice, the same PDF file, go to a peer-to-peer. And finance it over there, and then the third bank, and so on. And what we're always saying is, like, for those actors, for those to take responsibility, to step in, register the fact that they finance that on InView's network. Nobody is going to know that they specifically finance that specific invoice, but that would give them some sort of a safety net that anyone else check that wants to finance that invoice, if they'll check whether that invoice was already financed or not, to avoid default, to avoid fraudulent activity, would get such an indication. Would know that don't touch that invoice, it was already financed. And just the fact that has that invoice, specific invoice has been checked, would alert the original financer, telling him the guy who lended money from you is playing outside, beware.
Yeah, and I think that's the genuine sort of opportunity around sort of, you know, creating a much more open network sort of around these things, and you know, sort of then including various parties into that. But you've got very many actors, as you know. So you've got the freight forwarders, you've got sort of the inspection agents, you've got all these different people who need to be involved parties in order to be able to take full advantage of the blockchain. And I think companies like TradeIX, for example, are trying very hard to build those communities. But again, you know, because trade is everything and everywhere, it's very difficult for anybody to build a real, and I think it's going back to Julian's point about to build that critical mass that's so important. So, you know, so if you, to try this network play or this platform play, I think almost you have to sort of be the opposite to that. You also almost have to say, look, I'm going to find this particular spot and I'm going to integrate that particular sort of flow. And, you know, in our case, we're specialists in gold, for example, out of Africa. And you know, provenance is a big issue. So around gold, you know, sort of artisanal mining is a big sort of issue. Sort of now, you know, lots of people are sort of trying to force artisanal miners out of the marketplace and, you know, replace them with big purchasers. Yeah, so it's to provide provenance. So there's a whole lot of sort of activity which is particularly driven by AML and so on, which is pushing the smaller guy out of the marketplace. They're trying to force them or make the cost so high that it's actually difficult for them to participate. But at the same time, we know that the big guys don't have the operational processes and procedures to be able to manage those flows. So there'll be a big dislocation if we don't sort of sort these things out.
It does make sense. However, and I understand the issue of building critical mass, but it's obvious to me that there will be various systems spread throughout, various solutions. There won't be like one ring to rule them all. There will be various solutions, and there will be a need to interoperate between those various systems. You mentioned TradeIX, which is actually building Marco Polo. And I believe that Marco Polo is going to exist, WeTrade is going to exist, a lot of other networks are going to exist, and they will need some way to intercommunicate, and we hope that InVue would be one of the ways that they will choose to communicate across between those networks. In addition, we would also look into areas where you don't need a critical mass, when you can build a small ecosystem, like with Warehouse Receipt, that would allow the financing of those small older farmers or those commodity traders, import or small importers to work out of import warehouse. Again, and those do not require a critical mass, it just require a financier and a warehouse.
Very nice, guys. It was a very interesting chat, you know, full of insights.
I want to thank you all again for taking the time to listen to me, Andre. And
it was very insightful. Everyone. You know, I've worked, although on another side, I've worked intensely on the agriculture business, though I was, financing the purchase of equipment, basically, for the food farmers and stuff like this in Africa, namely. So, I mean, it was not about, you know, financing invoices. It was more than purchasing assets. But the problems were almost the same. They were very close. So, you know, you have those potential purchases and you had no finance to offer them, namely because of the extent of the purchases, which were not that big. And on the other side, for the lack of valuable information for banks to evaluate the potential deal, So, you know, I've lived these problems on my skin. It was big trouble for me to get to find some valuable solutions and to have these platforms working, and even effective solutions for me would be like gold, you know, like for the philosopher's stone or something like this. So thank you, Yair, for working on these issues and for exposing to the hypothetical finance special interest group. It was very interesting, and hopefully we keep line open for more insights from your side.
Thank you all for taking the time. Thank you, Andrew, so much for the kind words. And definitely, if there's anyone that or anything that this special interest group is interested in, or something that INVU can assist, we'll be more than happy to. Thank you very much.
Welcome. So, is there is anybody else would like to speak? I would say everybody, and see you next time on 21st of July. Julian, would you like to add anything?
No, but thank you, Gabe. That was a great talk, and great to hear Bob and everyone talking, right? That was a great conversation. Thank you, everybody.
It was very rewarding, Bob. Thanks for contributing.
All right. So, take care, everybody.
Let's meet again on 21st. Have a nice day, guys. Bye. Thanks so much, guys.
Bye. Thanks.